relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
So basically, Brianna was asleep, according to her boyfriend, Kenneth Walker. And then they just heard a noise. They heard somebody break in, or at least he did. The facts as put together are partly come from his call to her mom saying somebody broke in and shot Brianna, which indicates that he didn't know that it was police. And because Kentucky is an open carry state and he is a licensed, firearms carrier, he took out his gun to defend his girlfriend and himself from what he thought were intruders. He fired a shot. And the three police officers who had come to, they're saying it was not a no-knock 15. Warrant because they're claiming that they knocked and they said that it was police. But you have to remember, Jimmy, this was about 12:30 a.m. So this is when most people are asleep. These officers burst in and then they start shooting.
Really? Is that what happened? Joy Reid, the known homophobe with her blog posts slamming gay Americans that somehow she blamed on some hacker that we never, ever found. People just get shot in the middle of the night with no warning. The infamous Brianna Taylor incident. Well, let's tell you the truth. The army for the truth is broad. It isn't just Salem. It isn't just my crew here at America First. It is a bevy of individuals across this, the greatest nation on God's earth. And one of the best warriors is our buddy, Grant Stinchfield. Not only our colleague, Salem Radio out in Los Angeles with that superb warrior princess, Jennifer Horn, but Stinchfield every night, 8 p.m. Eastern on Newsmax. And when he tells me, dude, there's a guy who is on my show, you need to have him on America First so 3 million people can hear what he has to say, I don't hesitate. So he's with us right now. He's Sergeant John Mattingly, and he was the lead officer during that incident, and we are honored to recognize him on this show. John Mattingly, Sergeant Mattingly, welcome to America First.
Mr. Gorka, I'm excited to be here today.
Call me Sebastian, please. All right, let's start with who you are. Let's talk about your record, how many years you've been in the police force, who you served with, and the various duty posts that you filled. Please just give us a little biographic summary, if you would.
Sure. So I served for 21 years, all in the same department, Louisville Metro Police Department. I started back in 2000. I did 5 years on late watch, which is a midnight to 8 a.m. shift. After that, I went to what's called a flex unit, and it's a small narcotic-style unit within each division, and I did that for four and a half years. In 2009, I was promoted to sergeant, where I went back to late watch for about a year. My body was screaming at me at that point, you know, you're getting too old, let's do something else. I had 10 years on the department at this time, so I went to our division detective unit and was able to do that for about a year and a half, but the whole going into work every day in suit and tie and doing a lot of paperwork just wasn't my style in the police department. I like the hands-on, staying busy type stuff. So I then went back to what's called our Viper unit in 2012. And that was a violent crime unit we started because our increase in homicides and robberies had gone through the roof. And so we went after the worst of the worst. And I did that until late 2015, early 2016. That's when I went to our major narcotics unit. I've been up there until 2020 and March 13th when this incident took place, and the rest is history.
All right, so you've written a book. It is 12 Seconds in the Dark, a police officer's firsthand account of the Brianna Taylor raid. The mainstream legacy lying media would say that this was a no-knock warrant. You guys burst in, you started firing, and this woman was killed in her sleep or in her bed. Right. Will you tell us who Kenneth Walker is and who Brianna Taylor was?
Okay, Kenneth Walker was Brianna's current boyfriend. Now, the guy that she was associated with in this narcotics ring's name is Jamarcus Glover. And that's an ex-boyfriend, an on and off boyfriend that she still had very close ties to. Matter of fact, just in January, 2 months prior to this incident, she had bailed him out of jail for the same thing, drugs and guns. They used her address for that. He used her address for his license, for his registration of his vehicle, for his phone service, for his bank account. So everything tied those two together. However, she was dating Kenneth Walker at the time. And he happened to be at her house that night. We didn't know he was there when we were going. The intel we had was very limited. And it said that they thought she was going to be alone. Breonna Taylor she did work in the hospitals part time. They keep saying she was a nurse. She wasn't a nurse. She was she'd been certified as an EMT in late 2015. She only did that for 5 months and was fired by the city of Louisville with a no rehire clause in there because a lot of rumors going around. I can't justify those rumors, so I won't say. When we requested the information for her file, they refused to give it because they said they didn't want to disparage her name. All the while, they threw us under the bus every chance they got.
If we're not going to talk about certain accusations, let's just say, was it rumors of criminality or something she did inappropriate related to possible crimes?
Well, all the guys I know that are tied into EMS, even some of the higher ups, say that there was accusations of selling narcotics from the ambulance.
Wow.
Or maybe transporting them to Jamarcus Glover. But again, those are unsubstantiated rumors, and I hate, because of the way I've been treated for the last 2 years, I hate to paint somebody in that picture. However, in 2016, she did rent a car, and about a week later, there was a dead body found in that car in an alley, and they claimed the car was stolen, but it was tied into the same circle of people that she was running with. So there was a lot of things. She was storing the money for several dope dealers in her apartment, and that was verified by Jamarcus Glover.
So this isn't a rumor. So she was handling and stashing the cash for dealers.
Correct. Yes. On the jail phone calls after Jamarcus Glover was arrested after the night of March 13th, he called his baby mama, who he also kept stuff at her house. And he said, I need somebody to get to Breonna's apartment and get my money. And she was ticked off. She was like, well, why does Bree get your money? And he said, well, Bree holds a lot of our money. Because what these drug dealers do is they like to spread it around. So when the police get all their assets. And so that was the case that Breonna was tied into this organization.
All right. So talk to us about what the warrant was. What was the purpose of the warrant? And what was the plan for that evening?
All right. So my unit that served the warrant, or the guys I was with, we weren't part of the investigative team that did that warrant. We were in narcotics. And they were in a unit called place-based investigations where they used precision type tactics to take people who had major complaints on them, continuous complaints, and target them. And so this was a five warrant night. They had five locations that they needed to hit. And so it was a very manpower intensive event.
I would imagine, Sergeant, that is an unusually high number of warrants to serve in one evening.
It varies, Sebastian. I mean, there's times, generally you've got one or two places you're hitting, but when you're doing more organizations, you've got to hit several places at the same time.
At the same time, right.
Because the evidence will get destroyed because the word travels so fast that the police come out. And that's the case this night. And so the warrant was originally signed as a no-knock because they didn't know where Jamarcus Glover would be. So they had the judge sign them all as no-knocks. Once we realized, due to a tracker on his car and a ping on his phone, that he wasn't going to be at Breonna's apartment, we changed the parameters of that warrant to a knock and announce because it no longer fit the dynamics that we requested or that they requested it for.
So hang on. This is crucial. I mean, I want people to read your book, but because you didn't have the requisite intel at that moment in time, it was a no-knock warrant until you found out where he was, or you had the intelligence to that effect, and then the quality, the category of the warrant was changed from no knock to knock warrant.
That's correct.
And then what was the procedure? What was the plan of action?
So the goal was, during the brief, since Breonna's not going to be at this, or since Jamarcus Glover's not going to be at Breonna's apartment, they requested us to not only knock and announce, but to give it an additional time like we normally don't. They said, can you give this an extended period of time? She's a heavy set female, bang on the door, give her time to come to it. Because the goal wasn't even really to lock Breonna up. The main thing they wanted to do at that house was collect the people that were involved in this ring so they could tie this organization together. So the goal going in was to knock have her come to the door, not get the neighbors involved. That way we could go in kind of under disguise and take care of the business that we need to take care of and get out of there.
Right. So get the evidence of what was stashed there on behalf of this Glover person by Brianna so that you can collect the evidence to use against him should he have been located later that night somewhere else. We're talking to Sergeant Mattingly, John Mattingly. The book is, you've got to read it right now. The book is 12 Seconds in the Dark, a police officer's firsthand account of the Brianna Taylor raid. I have so many questions to ask him. In the meantime, follow this man at Sergeant Mattingly. That's SGT, acronym SGT for Sergeant Mattingly on Twitter. If you enjoyed this show as much as we love providing it to you, don't forget to subscribe. Go to Spotify, go to your favorite podcast platform, punch in my name, Sebastian Gorka, America First. Never miss an episode. Write us a review, share the links, and you won't miss a moment. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to register for our Stand With Israel tour. It is the trip of a lifetime with my superb Salem colleague, Dinesh D'Souza, wife Debbie, 10 days later this year in the Holy Land, where our Lord and Savior walked the earth. The places you may only have read about in the Bible, we're going to be there. The Temple Mount in Jerusalem, the Garden of Gethsemane, on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. This is a trip you don't want to miss. Reserve your places right now. Call 855-565-5519 or just go to StandWithIsraelTour.com. That's 855-565-5519, StandWithIsraelTour.com. Mike Lindell has a true passion to help everyone get the best sleep of their lives. Therefore, he created the Giza Dream bed sheets. They look and feel incredible, which translates to an even better night's sleep for you. Mike's latest amazing deal is the sale of the year. For a limited time, you will receive 60% off the Giza Dream sheets that come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. You'll receive a full set for as low as $39.99. And for a limited time, with any purchase, you'll receive Mike's soft cover book free when you use promo code GORKA. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and use promo code GORKA. Along with this offer, you'll also get deep, deep discounts on all his MyPillow products, including the MyPillow mattress topper, MyPillow towel sets, and so much more. Call 800-829-8468, promo code GORKA. Just go to MyPillow.com, promo code GORKA. All right, so we have the details of what the plan was. It changes to a knock warrant. You're actually given extra instructions because of the weight of this person and because they're not the prime individual. You're actually there to collect evidence, to give them time after you knock, get inside, collect the evidence. That's the plan. As wise military professionals say, no plan survives first contact with the enemy. So, Sergeant, what happened after you began to exercise that warrant at Brianna Taylor's apartment?
So as we made approach to the apartment, again, the plan was to do exactly like we were told, knock and announce, give it plenty of time. When we went up, I started knocking on the door. I was the primary.
So you are leading that warrant execution.
Correct. I'm in charge of that. Even though I have a lieutenant with me who outranks me, I had done this longer. This is what I do every single day. So he left that to me, and he's just there for peripheral. So I'm banging on the door on the left side of it. We don't stand in front of doorways. It's too dangerous. The breacher's on the right side in case we need it. I began banging on the door. And after I start announcing police search warrant, we're yelling this, an individual from upstairs pops out. He's like, "What are you guys doing?" And so they encountered him, and they asked him to go back inside. They explained to him, "Hey, we're here for a warrant, not you. Please go inside." Eventually, he complied and went inside, and we continued on. This went on for about a minute. I mean, we're talking open hand, loud bangs on the door, yelling police search warrant, because we don't want the suspects to think they're being intruded on. We want them to know we're the police. That way, there's not the potential of miscommunication, something going awry, unless they have the intention of doing that. So we banged on it. After a minute of no response, I look back at my lieutenant. He gives me the nod to go ahead. The breacher starts hitting the door. It took three hits with the ram to knock it open. As it came open from right to left, I'm standing on the left of the door. It comes open right to left. I'm able to see everything in the living room. As my field of vision comes around, I stop at the hallway because I can no longer see in. So at this point, I'm forced to step into the doorway. I never went into the house, but I'm forced to step into the doorway so I can see down the hall if there's any threats. As I step there, there's a long, dark hallway, about 25, 30 feet. There's some ambient light coming out from the bedroom. And as I turn and face, instantly, I knew something was wrong because there was two individuals at the end of this hall. And this three-foot hall had Breonna Taylor, who wasn't a small person, Kenneth Walker, who's not a small person, and they're overlapping at the end of this hall. All I see is a tall head and a short head. I can't make out faces, but the gun lights, when I turn, I can see his gun pointing straight at me. And so immediately I thought, oh, crap. And by this time, it's too late. You know, the gunshot goes off. I feel the pain in my leg. I return four rounds as quick as I can, and I get back behind cover, behind the doorway. I come back around, get two more rounds off that went into the door frame where Kenneth Walker had jumped into like a coward. And unfortunately, when he did that, Breonna attempted to follow him into the room, and that's when she was struck by the return fire and went down to the ground.
But, struck by whose return fire? By your fire or Walker's?
No, it was by my fire.
Okay.
One of my bullets hit her, and then the rest of them went to the wall and into the door jamb where he was at. She was later struck by another bullet by another officer that was trying to get me out of harm's way. So as soon as I was shot, I put my hand down on my thigh, and I realized this was more than just a through-and-through simple leg wound that I've seen hundreds of times on the street, because my hand was full of blood, and so I knew through all of our training that this had hit an artery, and I even announced that to the guys. As I sat down, I said, man, I've been hit. I need a tourniquet. I've been hit in my femoral. So at this point, I get up and I hobble out to the street where I'm yelling again at those guys who had retreated. Hey, I need a tourniquet. Got to get a tourniquet on.
You got to stop bleeding out. So you've got to apply a tourniquet to your upper thigh to stop the bleeding. Otherwise, you're going to faint and bleed out.
Yeah, you've got 5 to 8 minutes once you're struck in that artery to get it sealed off, or you're gone. And so the training kicked in, returned fire, got out of harm's way, then immediately went to what can I do to stay alive? And that's, you know, that was my goal that night. I'm going to stay alive and get home to my family. So once they get that tourniquet on, I'll tell you what, the pain of a tourniquet is 10 times worse than the pain of a gunshot wound, at least in the leg.
Right, because you're shutting off blood to your leg. You know, you've got to create such pressure that you're actually shutting off that artery.
Yeah, you're cranking the whole leg down super tight. It's no fun. But all that aside, you know, I'm thankful for it. I'm thankful the guys paid attention in training, so they were able to save my life. But then all the aftermath is what really went down. But here's the thing about Kenneth Walker. So you've got a guy who claims that he thinks he's getting home invaded. Well, as a man, if I think I'm getting home invaded, why would I take my girlfriend into the hallway with me, number one? I would have her stay back and call 911. You've got a minute to gather your faculties, get dressed, get your gun. You and your girlfriend get in the hall and stand wait for us. So at this time, why is no one calling 911? Now, here's something that people don't know, and I placed it in my book, but there was an officer who lived on the apartment in the apartment complex, what's called a courtesy officer. He makes runs there. He helps out on the side. He went to high school with Kenneth Walker. They're friends. They talk on a regular basis. Now, when this shooting occurred, he threw his uniform on and he came outside. He also knows Kenneth Walker's mother because he hung out with him. So Kenneth Walker had called his mother before he called 911. She shows up to the scene first.
Hang on. This is a grown-ass man, right? This isn't a 12-year-old.
Right.
And he thinks his house is being invaded and he calls his mother?
Right. Well, that just tells you the state of mind that he was really in. He knew he screwed up because he shot a cop. He knew that. There's no doubt in my mind. And here's the statement that makes me really think that. So when she comes up to this officer, Kenneth's mom, she says, Kenneth, she said, what's going on? He said, I don't know. She said, well, Kenneth called me and said, Mama, they're at the door. And she said, who's at the door, baby? And he said, it's the police. I've got to go, and hung up.
Hang on. So you have a witness. You have this community liaison officer who's a friend of the individual inside who's been shooting at you. His mother reports that he told her the cops are outside. So no question that he thinks it's a home invasion, correct? That's what you heard. That's what your colleagues heard.
Yes.
Okay.
That's
amazing.
Exactly.
All right, guys.
And this guy would have no reason. And this guy would have no reason to cover for us. Again, he's a friend of Kenneth's.
Right.
And if you look at his profile pictures, and I put a couple of them in the book, he's not for us. He's Black Lives Matter.
All right, guys, we have to get to the bottom of all of this. The book is 12 Seconds in the Dark. We're going to unpack it because you need to know the truth. If you enjoy this show, if you are also America First, check out our America First store. It's sebgorkastore.com. All the merchandise you could need to send your values to the world with what you wear, including all the Let's Go Biden gear. Let's go to sebgorkastore.com. Treat yourself and a loved one today. That's sebgorkastore.com. I didn't ask this question previously, and I probably should have. You're going after evidence against this Glover individual, the ex-boyfriend of Breonna Taylor. Kenneth Walker is the current boyfriend. He's the one who's shooting at you, the police officers, after you've knocked and declared. Did he have a criminal record? What do we need to know about Kenneth Walker?
He didn't have a big one. He had been stopped before firearms were open carry in the state of Kentucky. He had been stopped previously. I know he had a marijuana charge, and then he had a carrying concealed deadly weapon charge that was dropped. However, when they did a search warrant on his phone, just because you haven't been caught doesn't mean you're not a criminal. So when they did the search warrant on his phone, there was a ton of text messages and photos in there of narcotics where he was selling them to mainly the Hooters girls in southern Indiana, which butts right up to Kentucky. Pictures of him with different weapons, which again isn't illegal unless you're using it in a criminal activity. And so the third thing is there's text between him and some other guys where they said, "Hey, Ken, do you want to do a lick with us?" They're talking about a robbery, a home invasion. And he says, "Well, what's it worth?" And they said, $20,000. And he said, "Well, I like to do my homework on these things beforehand." So this guy had the lifestyle he was living was not one of pure and holiness. So it wouldn't be outside of the realm for him to think that someone was home invading him the way he home invaded other people, and possibly just yelling police search warrant, because that is it's a very common MO of drug dealers. When they'll go to houses, bang on the door, yell police, and either a female or a kid will open the door thinking it's the police, and they'll come in and rob them. So it's not outside of the realm of possibility that that's what took place here.
Right, but then he realized that it was the police. Okay, talk to us about what happened. What happened in the next 16 minutes, and how, in fact, did Breonna Taylor die?
Well, the coroner said she died out pretty quick, that even if she had been in an emergency room, she wouldn't have lived. That's just a guess, or he's got the expertise, so we'll go with that. But Kenneth Walker called his mother first, then he called 911, and when he was on the phone with 911, now we already know he knew we were the police when he talked to his mom. When he talked to 911, he told them, "I have no idea who just came in the door. They just came in and killed my girlfriend." And then he called Breonna Taylor's mom after that. So he would not come out for almost 16 minutes. And in 16 minutes, you can hide or destroy so much stuff and evidence. Like the gun was underneath the bed in a spare bedroom. If you think you're getting home invaded and you think somebody just shot your girlfriend, why would you put your gun under a bed and say you dropped it? So none of the things he said make sense. And then when he came out, and this is the kicker. When he came out, he said, he said, "What's going on?" They said, "You shot a cop." He said, "I didn't shoot him. She did." And this is all on video. And they said, wait a minute. Did you shoot or did she shoot? He said, "She shot. It's her 9. So he blamed it on Breonna Taylor, who was laying dead in the apartment, who possibly could have been saved had he just come out immediately. But instead, he stayed in there for 16 minutes doing God knows what, and then comes out and blames her. So that, again, that shows to his character and the liar that he is.
Incredible. Incredible. Okay, let's talk about what happened afterwards. Give us some details about how, after the years of defund the police and these demonstrations for Black Lives Matter, how were you treated after the event, and what was the role and the behavior of the Department of Justice federally and the FBI, Sergeant Mattingly?
So when this first went down, unfortunately, ever since Ferguson, ever since the Michael Brown incident, when a police officer is involved in a shooting, especially someone you know, the first question that comes out of your mouth is, were they black or white? And that should play no relevance. And it's asinine that we even ask those things. But unfortunately, that's the world we live in. And so it should just be, was it a good shoot or bad shoot, period. But when this happened, I thought, man, this is a white cop, a black female. I'm screwed. You know, even though I'm justified, this is not going to go over well. However, coronavirus had just kicked off. So this was Friday the 13th. It was a full moon when this all took place. Later that day, that's when they shut everything down nationwide. The president started coming on every day giving his speech, our governor, mayor. So we were encapsulated by the coronavirus. And I thought, maybe we scooted on this one. Maybe we're going to get by okay. Then Ahmaud Arbery happened. And when that happened, Ben Crump got on their case. Well, one of the attorneys for Breonna Taylor's family had worked a case previously with Ben Crump, I believe in law school when she was doing some work. And so she reached out to him and asked for his help. So he gladly jumped on because he saw dollar signs, right? So he jumps on and he goes, yeah, I'll help. So he starts blasting Breonna Taylor's name along with Ahmaud Arbery, which are two totally different situations. Well, then the trifecta happened. George Floyd took place. And when that happened, again, who's there to show up to stir the pot? Ben Crump. So now all three are tied together when you had this perfect storm. And I could feel ahead of time things starting to shift. Once Ben Crump got on board, things started to shift in the city. You could feel the tension starting to rise. And I started to reach out to public leaders saying, when are we going to put the truth out? All these lies have been posted that we had the wrong address, that we killed her in her sleep, that we were there to rob them, that we had been out drinking earlier that day. And all these things were easily disputed. We had the facts and they refused to put them out. And I said, why aren't we putting it out? And the thing from the mayor's office that came down said, well, we don't want to change precedent. We don't want it for future cases. We just don't put things out. And I said, so you'd rather the city burn than to set precedent here, which they change their precedent all the time anyway.
Incredible. We knew there was more to this story. The full details are in Sergeant Mattingly's book, 12 Seconds in the Dark, a police officer's firsthand account of the Breonna Taylor raid. We're going to tell you how his life has changed since then. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First One-on-One on the Salem Network, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. So I wish we had much longer to discuss all of this, but just give us a summary of what has happened to your family, Sergeant Mattingly, since these lies were perpetrated against you, since the feds, the FBI, the DOJ came in clearly with a political agenda. How has your life changed? Just give us a few examples.
Well, the major one was on May 31st, we got a call by the FBI that said, hey, we've got two separate sources that don't know each other that are telling us about a hit put out on you and your family. They're credible. They have been corroborated. One of them worked for the ATF. One of them worked for our narcotics. And you need to get out of your house. You got to find somewhere to go. Well, that's unsettling. Number one, who's got a place that, I mean, most people don't just have a place they can up and go to. So I'm scrambling, man. I'm reaching out, trying to find somebody. We get a place finally a couple hours away that my entire family can go to. We go, and I think, well, at least good. The FBI is on this, right? They're the most qualified law enforcement agency. They got the most tools, most resources. They're going to take care of this because it's one of their own. Well, that lasted all of a few days. And by the 10th or 11th day mark, the FBI had totally shut this case down. And here's why. Breonna Taylor's mom's been part of a black bike club that is known in the city for its drugs, weapons, and violence. And she's high up in it, dated the vice president in it. And they're the ones that met with another black biker club and took this hit out. And when the FBI, the more they got into it, they started using the word optics. They said, we can't go after a national victim.
Let me stop here. As a law enforcement professional, what is the verification for this? Can you tell us how you know this black biker gang is involved in the hit? How can we substantiate this, Sergeant?
So the informant for the FBI, for the ATF, was already embedded into this club. They already had an OSADEF case going, which is a case that's supported by the national government. It's funded by that. And so she had already, or that person had already been buying weapons from this club for the ATF. So they were already valid. They were already verified. And they brought this to the ATF without prompting, saying, hey, you know, I just don't want to see a cop get killed. And the other one had the same story, the same situation. And the two didn't even know each other. And they definitely didn't know each other, worked for different law enforcement agencies. So that was the verification. And once they got the same story from both qualified individuals, that's when they said the threat was real. And let me tell you, the FBI guys that were actually working the case, the agents, they were great. They're ticked off at the way management treats them, because these guys who had never even talked to this informant come in and say, oh, no, informants are unqualified. We're shutting the case down. And they were like, well, why? And they wouldn't give them any reason other than, you know, the optics look bad. So here my family is stuck in hiding, not knowing if these threats are still valid, if they're still going on. And to this day, over two years later, we don't know. And we just got to assume with all the money, that the influx that came into to Breonna Taylor's mom, the $19 million, that she's at least got more capabilities now to carry that out if she wanted to.
Now, what about the connection in terms of raising money to Black Lives Matter in Louisville? Can you give some details there? I mean, clearly this was used to raise funds. What did they spend it on?
Man, so recently, about 6 months ago, they purchased a piece of property and they paid $1 million cash for it. And on this property, it's in the center of Louisville, and they've got a gun range on it. They bought armored vehicles.
BLM, the local BLM yes. chapter, bought a $1 million property for cash with a gun range, and they have armored vehicles. Why?
Correct. Good question. You know, are they a social trying to make things better, or are they looking for a fight? It sounds to me like they're looking for a fight. Now, the funny thing is that after a year of this went on, Breonna Taylor's mom actually got on TV and blasted Black Lives Matter Louisville because she said they came in, used her daughter's name, raised money, and she didn't get any of it, whatever that means. I don't know if she wanted money or if she just thought they should have done more for her daughter. I'm not really sure on that. But she blasted them as well. So there's definitely a disconnect with all these groups because they're all reaching in. Until Freedom from up in New York, Tamika Mallory, she's, you know, this loud mouth that comes in and spreads lies and threats and never held accountable for any of it, which blows my mind how they can get up and physically say these verbal threats from these podiums that the governor gave her, that our mayor gave her, and nobody's held accountable.
Incredible. I'm going to ask you more details about what your family has had to do in terms of where you live since this incident. Dear friends, if you haven't done so, you've got to check out the amazing new movie from Dinesh D'Souza, 2000 Mules. We are going to the premiere at Mar-a-Lago with the president. It will shock you, the evidence that Dinesh and others have uncovered from True the Vote. You can watch it at 2000mules.com. There will be on the 7th an exclusive premiere virtually where you can ask live questions from Dinesh himself. Go now to 2000mules.com. It's the evidence of more than 400,000 illegal ballots harvested during the election in 2020. That's 2000mules.com, 2000mules.com. So Sergeant Mattingly, talk about what else is how many different places have your family ended up living? Talk to us about access to lawyers for you, for other members of the team. It sounds like your life has become a living hell since this incident.
It's been something that movies couldn't even, if you saw all this stuff in movies, you wouldn't think it was real. And I never thought I would be in this situation either. You know, you think it won't happen to you, or at least not to this extent. So yeah, we've had to move six different times. I think we're finally in a place we're staying. But when you're freeloading off people, trying to find locations and, you know, trying to sell the house we had just bought, then there's a lot of stress involved in that. And what I want to let people know, especially the people who are the pundits or the liberal media, the ones that attack you on social media, when you attack me, that's fine. You know, I had 21 years of police work where you get pretty callous to a lot of things. But our families aren't used to that, and they're innocent in all this. The children, the grandchildren, the parents, my wife. So all these things are external stressors that are hard to deal with. And unfortunately, like you were talking about the lawyers in Louisville, this was a huge one. When all this came down and we knew that there were potential charges against us from the state, then we reached out to the best attorneys in Louisville, because that's who you want representing you, correct? You think, okay, lawyers don't care. I mean, they represent murderers and rapists and child molesters and all that. Surely they'll represent me. That's wrong. None of us could get a lawyer in Louisville. And you'd call them and you go, man, can you represent me? I've got a conflict of interest, or, oh, it just ain't going to work out. Nobody would be honest, except one lawyer finally told me the truth. And he said, John, you know this would ruin my career. This is my business. You know who I represent. I would love to help you. My wife's freaking out because anybody that helps you all is getting doxxed and attacked, and we're scared to do it. So he was the only one that had the courage to tell me the truth, and I appreciated that. But it's sad that you can't even get fair representation because you're a police officer. You're the one doing the right thing all these years. You're the one helping the community, and the community just pushes back against you. It's just very disheartening.
The individuals who make money out of representing pedophiles, murderers, rapists, and bank robbers, that's fine. But when it comes to representing an officer who did his job, no, he's afraid to do that. We're talking to the author of 12 Seconds in the Dark, a police officer's firsthand account of the Breonna Taylor raid, from Sergeant Mattingly. You mentioned just now that you're just trying to do your job, Sergeant Mattingly. I just want to ask you one more question before I encourage everybody to read your book. I presume you've retired or you've left the force right now.
Yeah.
Tell me, how did your colleagues who are still in the force, friends you have in other jurisdictions, I mean, because I'm a civilian, but I served in the British Army, but I've trained thousands and thousands of law enforcement officers across the country, local, state, federal. And I just don't know how you guys go to work anymore, how you put on the badge, strap on the gun, and go to work when the mayor, the local commissioner doesn't have your back, and when you are prey to political enemies that can ruin the life of your whole family. What is your message to those officers who are still in the bag?
Well, it's tough because people say, man, would you do it again? And I say, yes, I would do my career again because I enjoyed it. I loved it. Would I start over now as a new guy doing it? Probably not, for the simple fact that, like you said, there's just no support from upper command, especially if you're in a liberal city like Louisville is, and like all the main cities. You're already behind the eight ball just trying to do the right thing and uphold the laws that are on the book. So I would tell them, you know, we need you. We have to have you. You're the one holding the line. We appreciate you. And I hope you continue to do it, because we do need you as America. And that's the whole point in the book. It isn't about John. It isn't about just my situation. This is hopefully a wake-up call to America to say, hey, if we continue to travel down this path, if we keep going the direction we're going and chasing off all the good cops and prosecuting the ones who are just doing their jobs, you're going to get the bottom of the barrel. We're going to be what we were in Detroit and New Orleans in the 80s, and you're going to have corruption to the level you've never seen, and that's not what you want, and that's not what America needs.
How is your family doing right now after all of this, Sergeant Mattingly?
You know, God's been good to us. We're very strong in our faith. We're a very tight-knit family, so we support each other. In the times when somebody's down, the other one will come and lift them up, and we've just been very blessed. I really don't have any complaints. You know, I wish life were a little bit different. I didn't want to be in the spotlight. But since we're here, we're using it to our advantage to help other people who might be in the situation we were in, that don't have a voice or don't have resources or don't have the resiliency or the place to go to and turn to. So we just really want to help people now.
Well, I want to thank you for your decades of service to the Louisville Metro Police Department, for your bravery, your courage, not only doing your job every single day, but also for speaking the truth right now. And we will be praying for you and your family. In the meantime, please support this man. The website is sgtmattingly.com. You can follow him. It's the same on Twitter, Sergeant Mattingly, and purchase the book, 12 Seconds in the Dark, A Police Officer's First-Hand Account of the Breonna Taylor Raid. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First One-on-One. Keep your head on a swivel. Watch your six. Hold the line. Never give up. Never give in. And stay frosty.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
I have a dream.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... And the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again. This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
This is the first time the president attended this dinner in 6 years. It's understandable. We had a horrible plague followed by 2 years of COVID.
You're supposed to laugh now. You're not. Good. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First on the Salem News Channel. Welcome, dear friends. We have quite the show for you today. That was the incumbent of the White House, an individual who likes to think the Trump administration, in which I worked, was a plague. And he thinks that's funny. That was, of course, from the White House Correspondents Association dinner that I did not attend because I would prefer to have a root canal than to be stuck in a room with 4,000 individuals, the majority of whom are swamp creatures and propagandists. I did, however, attend prior to that the pre-dinner Newsmax party, which was a lot of fun. Thank you, Chris Ruddy. Thank you, Elliot. It was a great opportunity to hang out with real Americans and patriots like Chris Plant, Mark Morano, Mark Morgan, and others. So, let me do a little quiz. Let's start with a little test. In the history of mankind, we have maybe 5,000-6,000 years of recorded history. Very early historians such as Tacitus began the trend for not mythology, but for actually fact-based history. In those millennia of human written endeavor, what are the real sentences, the quotes that have gone down as immortal? Now, we could, of course, discuss the words of our Lord and Savior, the Beatitudes, the Sermon on the Mount, what Jesus said on the cross, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. Let's limit our survey to just politicians, not the Son of God. And let's make it even easier. Let's talk about the last 100 years. Let's talk about the cessation of hostilities in World War I to the present day. What are the lines, what are the sayings that are immortal? There are not many phrases or sentences that have registered themselves as things that will be discussed centuries from now. Perhaps Churchill's "We shall fight them on the beaches" is among them. When it comes to American politicians, of course it's the Gettysburg Address, but I'm talking about the last century. In the last century, what do we have? We have nothing to fear but fear itself, probably right up there. Is there anything else? And I'm saying American examples because there aren't many others. I mean, don't forget, Churchill was half American. In the last 40 years, there's one phrase that, even if you're just moderately interested in history, you can quote it correctly because it is a sentence that in 19 months after it was enunciated actually led to the biggest geopolitical change since 1948. And that was, of course, Ronald Reagan standing at the Brandenburg Gate in a divided Germany, telling Gorbachev, the then head of the Soviet Union, a nation that wished, as Khrushchev said, his predecessor, to bury us, yes, as he was banging his shoe on the table at the United Nations. What did Reagan do? He stood there and said a line, which, of course, the swamp had removed from his speech 7 times. The State Department had removed this line from his speech. "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." Did I say that correctly? Because somebody who can't say it correctly is the self-same Joe Biden at the self-same White House correspondence dinner, again, trying to be funny. Cut 7.
Ronald Reagan said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear this wall down. Today's Republicans say, tear down Mickey Mouse's house. And pretty soon they'll be storming Cinderella's castle, you can be sure of it.
Don't give up the day job, Sleepy Joe, because you're not funny. At the hot mic, at the open mic at the local comedy club, you will bomb because that delivery was so bad. Tear this wall down? How could you even get that wrong? And you think it's funny? Republicans are going to storm Cinderella's castle. That means you're okay with what Disney is doing. Clearly, you're senile, but you're also okay with the sexualization of our children. As we can tell from the photographs that have gone viral in the last 2 days, what do we know about the White House correspondence dinner? It's just the same elite laughing at you. That line from Trevor Noah's pitch at the beginning, cut 6, and Biden's response tells you everything you need to do. You need to know. Play cut.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you. Please be careful leaving tonight. We all know this administration doesn't handle evacuations well. Good night, everybody. Thank you so much.
The fact that they can joke about evacuations not going well. And what is it with, can you just put that up silently and just freeze it, Eric, on the backdrop? How weird. What is the creased White House background? What is with that? Do they not have irons at the DC Hilton? Is this just another example of the Potemkin fake village that is the Biden administration? They have to have a movie set of the Oval Office across the Executive Boulevard outside of the West Wing in the Eisenhower building. Do they roll up that backdrop, crease it and fold it and bring it to the Hilton to make it look like you're in the White House, Trevor? 13 Americans were killed by ISIS in that evacuation. Now, there is a philosophy here that some comedians say nothing is out of bounds. You can make jokes about the Holocaust, anything. But really, 13 dead Americans murdered by ISIS in Kabul airport? That was just, what, less than a year ago? And now it's a punchline at the White House Correspondents Association dinner where nobody was wearing a mask except, of course, the mostly black and Hispanic waitstaff. It's never been about the disease, has it? Fauci, who said, I'm so concerned for the new variants, I'm not going to the White House dinner. Oh, but he did go to the pre-party and, you know, mugged it up, taking selfies with nary a mask in sight with morons like Don Lemon. Is it about COVID? Really? You're so concerned? You know what it's really about. It's about power. It's about controlling you. And that's why we're here, to stop them and to stop the lies. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First of the Salem Network. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, be sure to subscribe to the podcast. Never miss any of our one-on-one episodes. Go to Spotify, punch in Sebastian Gorka, America First. Subscribe today. It's absolutely free. Write a review, share the links, and you'll never, ever miss a moment. Next, we have the receipts. We have the proof of how they stole the election. Dinesh D'Souza with his new movie.
Thank you.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.